Welcome to CR Amplified, the Cairo Reviews podcast, where we talk to experts and policymakers about relevant issues on the world stage. I'm Abigail Flynn. Israel's war on Gaza is approaching the end of its second year. As global accusations of genocide mount, European states have increasingly voiced support for recognizing a Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the Arab states have been pushing for the creation of a Palestinian state for decades. On the other hand, some Arab states did begin to normalize relations with Israel starting in 2020, even though Israel had not made any movement toward the creation of a Palestinian state. Why does this contradiction from the Arab states exist? And in light of what's happening in Gaza, what does it mean for the future of Palestine? Today I am joined by Dr. H.A. Hellier, an academic and intellectual who researches the politics and geopolitics of the contemporary Middle East, to help explore these questions. Hello, Dr. Hellier. Thank you for joining me today for this episode of CR Amplified to discuss the issue of Palestinian statehood. We've seen the issue of establishing a Palestinian state referenced again and again by the Arab states, but we also saw many of these same states normalize relations with Israel in the absence of any true movement toward this objective from the Israelis, like we saw with the Abraham Accords. So my first question is, why do the Arab states bring up the issue of Palestinian statehood so often?
It's a lovely pleasure to be on the podcast. For your listeners, once upon a time, I was a professor at AUC. So this seems like a very long time ago when my beard was maybe more black as opposed to white and gray. But it was a lovely time, and I'm always happy to be back virtually or otherwise. Your question, if I understand correctly, why are Arab states focusing more on this? Is that what you were getting at?
Yes.
So I perhaps have a bit of a controversial view when it comes to this particular question, because I think that a good part of what is pushing this current drive to recognize a Palestinian state is actually something of a betrayal of weakness and an admittance of a lack of power. Because the fact is that it's not about whether or not a Palestinian state is recognized. It's about whether or not the Israeli occupation of the territories that would be governed by a Palestinian state ends. And of course, more immediately, that the horrific and devastating war on Gaza by the Israelis stops. And I have legal training, so I'm loath to sort of jump ahead of the International Court of Justice when it comes to this particular question. But let's be very clear. The definition of genocide and the tests for claiming this is a genocide are pretty blatant and transparent, and it's extremely troubling to see people get so sort of hung up on this issue of recognition when really this could be a trap. And I say it could be a trap because what we have is a huge amount of political effort being put into this recognition point. And my concern is that people would then recognize the state of Palestine, but then not do anything to bring it into existence, which would be very similar to how the Oslo Accords worked out, in the sense that there were the Oslo Accords, but there were no mechanisms for accountability when people, in particular the Israelis, broke international law or violated the accords themselves. So what you had was, you know, this constant expression of support for the peace process, support for the Palestinians, but no actual policy that meant that there was a consequence to the Israelis doing what they were doing. And unfortunately, we've seen much of that over the past 2 years. This is why I say it could turn out to be a trap. Now, I hope that it will be a trap that people will jump into and then jump out of, okay, in the sense that they will actually follow through and say, okay, we have now made it very clear that, these nations all recognize the state of Palestine. Now they actually have to do something to end the occupation of it. But keeping in mind, I think it's around 150 states out of around 185, I think it is, at the UN that already recognize a state of Palestine. Now, this will be a bit different because these are some of the more powerful states, in Europe that will now recognize the state of Palestine. So it does make a difference in that regard. But if France, if the UK, if these other countries that rec will recognize the state of Palestine do not then take action to ensure that recognition means that there'll be actually a state, okay, i.e., that the occupation will end, then I think it will be just very symbolic. Now, it will be symbolic, and there will be other things that can happen as a result of it. But I don't think anybody should assume that simply by recognizing the state of Palestine, it's going to be a game changer in the short to medium term. On the contrary, it could turn out to be that I think there was a famous French, I think he was actually the Israeli ambassador to France, retired, writing a letter. I think it was in Le Monde. I could be wrong, but he wrote an open letter to Macron, to President Macron, and he said, "You'll be recognizing a grave site unless you do something." Like it was a letter where he was saying, you have to do something. You have to make sure that there are consequences. And this is why I say I think that this push kind of betrays a bit of weakness, because it should go hand in hand with arms embargoes. It should go hand in hand with massive sanctions. And so far we've not seen that.
Thank you, Dr. Hellier. So, in line with this understanding of people or states pushing for recognition of statehood and yet not complementing that with any real policy action, looking toward the Arab states again, why were so many of them willing to normalize relations with Israel despite Israel consistently dismissing the idea of establishing a Palestinian state?
I kind of question the premise of the question, because I don't think that you have a big normalization push going on right now. On the contrary, any idea that there would be a broadening of normalization of the Israelis in the region, I think is a fallacy. I don't think that that's the case. I think that when it comes to the Saudis, they've made it very clear they're not normalizing until there's a Palestinian state. When it comes to the Syrians, there's absolutely no indication that they're going to normalize. What they may do is simply return to the 1974 agreement, which basically freezes relations in a place that means that the Israelis stay out of Syria, other than the occupied Golan Heights. But normalization is a pipe dream when it comes to the Syrians, at least for the medium to long term. Same thing with the Lebanese. I mean, when people talk about, the idea of further normalization, they're usually talking about the Saudis, the Syrians, and the Lebanese. And I don't think that there's any possibility that that's going to happen anytime soon at all. Unless you're talking about existing states, like, so Egypt has recognized the state of Israel. There was a peace agreement that's now, more than 40 years old. If you're talking about existing arrangements, that's not normalizing, that's already done. Are you talking about those? Because, of course, when the last time that the Israelis were normalized with was through the Abraham Accords. And during the Abraham Accords, even though nobody really thought that Netanyahu wanted a Palestinian state, he never actually said so like it at that point. Let's answer it this way. Or I'm going to presume that this is what's going on here. So the Emiratis normalized, or at least recognized, the state of Israel during the Abraham Accords in 2020, for strategic reasons of their own, i.e., it wasn't about the Palestinians. There was the claim that this stopped the annexation of the West Bank. I don't think that that was the main reason, because of course there's no guarantee that it would, and I don't think it will. I think actually the Israelis don't even consider the Abraham Accords in any discussions now around annexing the West Bank. I think that there were wider strategic considerations from the Emirati's perspective when it came to this particular question. Same thing with the Bahrainis. And of course, the relationship that they both have with Washington, D.C., and how they saw at the time positioning in the region. Of course, I think a lot of this has changed, but I don't see any inclination that they're going to change that. The Moroccans did so, frankly, because they wanted, in my opinion, American recognition of Moroccan sovereignty over Western Sahara, and they got it. So that worked well for them. Again, it wasn't about Palestinians for them. It was purely about, their own strategic interests as they saw it. Whether I agree with that or you agree with that is not really the point. Sudan did not normalize. It took a step towards normalization, but it did not normalize because that had to be subject to ratification from a new assembly or parliament of Sudan, which of course has never been established since. But for very understandable reasons, they took that step forward because they desperately needed to get Sudan off of the terrorism list from the United States in order for Sudan to recover. So I'm not surprised that they felt that they had to move in that direction, but it was moving in that direction. It wasn't actually doing it, because I don't think that it would go down in Sudan. Quite frankly, I think Sudanese writ large would reject it. But they took that step in that sort of direction, and it worked. It got them off the list. So when we're talking about existing relationships, of course that's the case. Jordan happened at a very different time. It was right after the Oslo Accords. And of course, Egypt was most concerned about getting Sinai back. And included language, I have to say, in Camp David about Palestinians. But we know from history that never worked out. So presumably, that covers both the existing relations. And by the way, there have been other relations that just haven't been very clear. And again, for just very different reasons. The Qataris had their own Israeli trade office in Doha very early on in the, I think, the early 2000s, and it eventually closed. And it closed because they just didn't think that there was any utility to it, and they were angry about what was going on in the occupied territories, from what I remember. There was normalization. I mean, people forget this, but actually Mauritania normalized with the State of Israel. I don't think anybody remembers this because it didn't last particularly long. They broke off political ties, within a few years because of their outrage at what the Israelis were doing in the occupied territories. The Omanis, of course, have had, close relations, but again, they all have their different reasons for this.
So, along with that, many have pointed to the issue of the Israel-Palestine conflict as a major source of persistent instability in the region. Do you think in your lifetime you'll ever see a Palestinian state? And would its creation really bring peace to the Middle East?
So, a creation of a Palestinian state, I think you'll have the overwhelming majority of states worldwide recognize a Palestinian state. Do I think that it will be allowed to operate as such in my lifetime? I guess it depends how long I'll live. I don't see a political horizon when it comes to that question for at least the next 10, 20 years. at least, because you have to keep in mind there are two critical countries that are involved in how that situation is going to turn out. One, of course, is the United States, and the other is the State of Israel. They are the critical factors when it comes to actually allowing for a state to be established. The United States, by putting pressure on the Israelis or withdrawing support from the Israelis, and the Israelis for allowing one or not allowing one. Because there won't be anybody else who will force the Israelis during the next sort of 10, 20 years. I do think that the long-term trend is very bad for the state of Israel when it comes to public opinion, not only in the United States, but worldwide, including in Europe. I do think that means that they'll have a much tougher time. Right now, they can rely on any Democratic president that's come to power thus far, any Republican president that's likely in the next decade. I think they can rely on, a fair amount of support. But I don't think that that's indefinite. And you, of course, have within the Democratic Party a lot of angst about how the Israelis are perpetrating all sorts of crimes in the occupied territories. And within the Republican Party, a split between those who want to hold to Donald Trump's perspective in this regard, but then also others who are far more, quote unquote, America first and not wanting to provide arms and money to, another state. I mean, it's just another state far, far away that doesn't necessarily impact, as far as they're concerned, on their day-to-day lives. And then there are others who just don't like the Israelis. But there are going to be, I think, new configurations in that regard. And I think that changes the calculus. But we're not talking in the immediate future. We're not talking, in my opinion, we're not talking in the next 10, 20 years. And one has to ask what's going to be left for there to be established at that particular point. I will say, just so your viewers don't like think that this is, unavoidable. There have been other times in history where, especially Palestine and different parts of it, were lost to Palestinians. And I'm thinking particularly during the Crusader era, where Crusaders established kingdoms, and these kingdoms didn't last. They lasted for 20 years, they lasted for 50 years, they lasted for 100 years. I think the lo longest lasting one was 140 years, or 120, if I remember correctly. But eventually, they disappeared, and they disappeared because they could only exist if A, they really integrated into the region, and they didn't, they refused. B, if the surrounding community was just very, very weak and couldn't withstand them. And of course, that eventually changed. And see if they had an external power backing them. And of course, eventually that also changes, right? So, I think history has some interesting lessons for us to remember in this regard.
That concludes our questions. Thank you very much for your time and for your thoughtful contributions, Dr. Hillier.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Seer Amplified. And thank you again to Dr. Hillier for your insightful contributions. Until next time.